Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Billions of dollars are spent each year to stave off death. We invest in research and treatment of disease and improving safety and in educating people to live healthier, longer lives. Yet with all the technological and scientific capacity, what do we know of what happens after death? John Martin Fisher is Distinguished Professor of Philosophy at the University of California at Riverside. He was awarded a $5 million grant to study the afterlife. He has launched the Immortality Project, sponsoring conferences and scientific, philosophical, and theological research that advances the understanding of immortality and belief in immortality. John Martin Fisher, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
There are several parts to this project. How would you summarize what you are trying to do?
Yes, it's actually even broader in scope than just studying the afterlife. Part of it is studying longevity and the possibility of actually living forever and never dying. You're right that part of it will study different conceptions of the afterlife and look at near-death experiences kind of as a way of, as a portal possibly to the afterlife. So it's very broad. We're looking at secular as well as religious ideas of immortality.
So you're trying to answer questions that human beings have been trying to answer for millennia, along with, I guess, a few new ones.
Yes, absolutely. And as a philosopher, I kind of specialize in questions that have been around for millennia. I've done some work on free will and moral responsibility, and those aren't easy nuts to crack either. But this is a great time to be looking at questions of longevity and living forever because there are some breakthroughs in biology that suggest, at least to some people, that we can considerably enhance our prospects for longevity and even someday achieve a kind of biological immortality. And in fact, in the last 100 years, we've basically doubled the average expected life expectancy of human beings. So it's kind of an interesting moment in human history to look again at these questions.
From what I understand, you got this $5 million grant from the John Templeton Foundation, one of the largest grants ever awarded to an individual professor at your university. Well, with so much research money available, you've gotten proposals from all over the world. A lot of research focused on near-death experiences, which may pretty much be the extent of our understanding of the moment of death. Tell us about what Sam Parnia and his team are doing out of SUNY Stony Brook.
It's a really fascinating project. He's going to study people in a cardiac intensive care ward, and he's going to study their brains and try and understand what the neuroscientific evidence would be for, or what the basis for claims about the possibility of consciousness during certain cardiac events, and whether it's plausible that people can be conscious during that time. He's also going to, there will be questionnaires after the people survive or after the people recover, which we hope they do. Mm-hmm. And this is to test another component of near-death experiences, which is the so-called out-of-body experience, the idea that somehow you experience yourself as floating above your body or something like that. So, and there are other great projects. One of the projects I find really fascinating is on terror management theory. Terror management theory is the idea that we're all, as human beings, deeply afraid of death, and much of what we do, including much of our religious activities, is an attempt to manage that fear of death. And so one of the projects is developed by and pursued by two proponents of this terror management theory, where they're going to be looking at kind of, I mean, what features of human beings predicts whether they're going to take a secular or a more religious approach. That is, why do some people go in the direction of Aubrey de Grey and Ray Kurzweil and try and live forever, and other people are more attracted to the comfort and solace provided by religious views of the afterlife? So I think that's going to be a really fascinating project.
We're speaking with John Martin Fisher. He is the project leader for the Immortality Project, which is based at UC Riverside, exploring various different aspects of the afterlife, whether the person could survive bodily death, the extent of beliefs about immortality, how that influences behavior. I'm wondering about this kind of interdisciplinary approach, the not purely biological, not purely theological. How do you manage these things? You're talking about bridging religion and science in some cases.
It's not that every project will have these different dimensions. For instance, the work of Sam Parnia or the work of Mel Slater in Barcelona.
Uh-huh.
Or the Israeli group. We fund those projects and we don't then tell them how to conduct their research. If they want to conduct their research in a purely scientific way, that's fine. But we will be having a conference in June of 2014 bringing all the scientists together, and I and my team will also be there. And what we'll be hoping for is fruitful interactions and conversations. And then at the end of the project, the Capstone Conference will bring all the philosophers and theologians and scientists together for conversations. But each individual researcher will have the autonomy and the authority to pursue his or her research the way he or she thinks is appropriate.
And how can you ensure that questions and experiments are approached with scientific rigor? I mean, a lot of these are psychological questions, aren't they?
Yes. Well, what we did was we impaneled seven judges who are internationally acclaimed and respected scientists, neuroscientists, psychologists, and we vetted those judges very carefully, and we worked together with the Templeton Foundation to find these judges. And my team and I made our final decisions based on a very careful analysis of the scientific credentials of all these researchers. That's going to be the same approach we take in the philosophy and theology competition. We impaneled seven judges who are top-flight theologians and philosophers. I'm familiar to some degree with many of the people who I anticipate will apply for these grants, and my team and I have no specific agenda that we're trying to pursue except one, and that is to seek the truth via very highly regarded academic researchers, and that's the way we're trying to ensure it.
Do you have a concept of the afterlife?
I have a concept in the sense that I try to understand various religious views of the afterlife. I myself am quite agnostic about whether there is an afterlife. I don't think we have decisive evidence that there is no afterlife. On the other hand, I don't think we have strong evidence that there is an afterlife. I live my life trying to get as much as I can out of every day and trying to find meaning in my relationships and my family and my career. And I don't presuppose or assume that there is an afterlife.
I was thinking as I was reading about this quest for understanding immortality, the current fascination with the zombies and the undead, you know, the vampires that live forever and ever in kind of restless longing or the monotony of life as a zombie, these fictional monsters, or even the character of Dorian Gray, you know, sort of bored with his everlasting life. It made me wonder about the afterlife that everybody seems to want to understand and is chasing, and whether or not people have investigated the idea that it may not be paradise, but a pretty relentlessly boring place.
Right. Well, I'm hoping and anticipating that there will be some projects in the philosophy and theological part of our grant that look at these issues of boredom and ennui and alienation. First of all, there's been a lot of interest among philosophers just in whether we would find immortal life, not in the sense of an afterlife, but just living forever, boring and monotonous. Would the meaningfulness and the richness and the urgency of our lives go away if we had extreme longevity or perhaps immortality in the sense of living forever. And there are various philosophers, famously, who've argued we wouldn't want to live forever. We wouldn't find it choice-worthy because it would be boring. And I think very similar and maybe exactly the same questions could be raised about an afterlife and have been raised. You know, famously, Mark Twain thought that heaven would be boring and he wouldn't want to be listening to harp music and talking to angels. And, you know, and others have raised this set of questions about the Christian or other conceptions of an afterlife. So, yes, there has been a lot of work on whether living forever would be something that we as human beings would want. And there is some interesting work about whether an afterlife is really something we would aspire to.
John Martin Fisher, thank you for your time today.
Okay, thank you very much.
That's Professor John Martin Fisher. He is project leader of the Immortality Project. We have much more on the project. You'll find that all at wordofmouthradio.org. You can also follow us on Facebook and on Twitter.